Hey, thanks for tuning in to Organic Matters for the week. The show is going to be a bit interesting. I'm going to add some of my older shows. We call them encore performances. I'm going to do some current information. Because it's Thanksgiving Day and we've got things going on, I usually record this thing on Thursdays and Fridays. So there'll be a mix of everything, but I promise it's something if you want to stay for a listen, you might just catch on to something you're either interested in or maybe learn something new. I try to learn something new every week. So, why putting solar canopies on parking lots is just really a good, smart, green idea. Solar farms are proliferating, mostly on undeveloped land, sometimes even harming ecosystems just to put it up. But placing solar canopies on large parking lots, for instance, offers a host of advantages. Makes use of land that is already cleared, producing electricity that's close to those who need it, and of course, the little bit of advantage is it's shading the vehicles of all the people that are coming to either work there or if they happen to be customers of whatever parking lot you're using. If you happen to fly into Orlando, Florida, you may notice just as you're coming in, about a 20 or 25 acre solar power array. And how come you won't miss it? It's because it's in the shape of Mickey Mouse, folks. And it's in a field just west of, course, Disney World. Nearby, Disney's also done another 270 acre solar farm of more conventional design on what was an orchard and forest land. Park your car in any of Disney's 32,000 parking spaces, on the other hand, and you won't see a canopy overhead generating solar power or providing shade or anything. Not even if you snag one of those preferred spaces for which visitors pay up to around $50 a day just to use it. This is how it typically goes with solar arrays. They're built on open space rather than in developed areas. That is, they overwhelmingly occupy croplands, or what were croplands, arid lands and grasslands, but not rooftops or parking lots. That's according to a global inventory published last month in Nature magazine I came across. In the United States, for instance, roughly 51% of utility scale solar facilities are in deserts, 33% are on croplands, and just 10% are in grasslands and forest. However, just 2.5% of U.S. solar power comes from urban areas where it's needed most. The argument for doing it this way can seem compelling. It is a cheaper way to build on undeveloped land than on rooftops or on parking lots. And building alternative power sources fast and cheap is critical in the race to replace fossil fuels and avert catastrophes caused, you know, from that fuel's climate change, if that's what you want to call it. It's also easier to manage a few big solar farms on an open landscape than 1,000 small ones scattered across urban areas. Despite the green image, putting solar facilities on undeveloped land is often not much better for the land than putting subdivisions there. But that doesn't necessarily make it smarter. Undeveloped land is a rapidly dwindling resource, and what's left is under pressure to deliver a host of other services we require from the natural world. Growing food, sheltering wildlife, storing and purifying water, preventing erosion, and sequestering carbon. And that's just some among many others. And that pressure is rapidly intensifying. By 2050, in one pretty plausible scenario, from the National Renewable Energy Lab, applying solar power for all our electric needs will require ground-based solar on about 0.5% of the total land area of the United States. To put that kind of number in a perspective, let's try that. It's less land than we already dedicate to growing corn ethanol or biofuels. Well, that sounds like a small amount, 0.5%, folks. We're talking about, in real space, over 10 million acres of land. That's because it's more efficient to generate power close to customers. Some states could end up with as much as 5% of their total land area, and about 6.5% in a state, for instance, the size of Rhode Island. And if we also ask solar power to run the nation's entire automotive fleet, we're looking at probably another 5 million acres of land. Sounds like it's growing there, folks, but it's still far less than half of the 31 million acres of cropland eaten up in 2019 alone just to grow corn for ethanol. Incidentally, for those of us that are kind of greenies, it's notoriously inefficient way to make energy. That corn thing is just basically for a supplement for the farmers. It's not a very efficient way to get energy for our automobiles or anything else. As I mentioned earlier, despite the green image, putting solar facilities on undeveloped land is often not much better than putting subdivisions on them. Developers tend to bulldoze sites, removing all of the above-ground vegetation, and that's bad for insects and the birds that feed on them. In the Southwest deserts, where most U.S. solar farms now get built, the losses also include the loss of millions, really, of 1,000-year-old creosote bushes, and people don't realize they're 1,000 years old, 100-year-old yuccas, or worse, the proposed 530-megawatt Aretina solar project near Moron, California, will destroy about 4,500 western Joshua trees, a species imperiled, ironically, by development and climate change. Incidentally, that particular tree is being considered the state tree to be protected in California. And the one that got me, for those of you who know me, I work with turtles and tortoises all my life. There's an endangered tortoise out, the endangered desert tortoise, and they end up translocating these tortoises, folks. And in all the studies we know, we're not sure how successful that even is. So the results are totally unknown. But they move them. They just change them, animals that have lived there tens of thousands of years. And in addition, there's a tendency to cluster these solar facilities in the buffer zones, for instance, around protected areas. And that really does confuse wildlife, especially birds that complicate their migratory corridors. And we're not sure what it'll do to those long bird migration patterns. The appeal of parking lots and rooftops, by contrast, is that they are abundant, close to customers, largely untapped for solar power generation, and on land that's already been stripped of its biological values. A typical Walmart parking center, the super centers, I think is what they're going for instance, has at least 5 acres of parking, and it's a wasteland, especially if you have to, and I've done it, sweat your way across it under, literally in the summer, certain parts of the country, asphalt bubbling up under your feet. Put a canopy over it, though, and it would support a 3-megawatt solar array, according to a recent study that in addition to providing power to the store, the neighboring community, the car sheltered underneath it, the canopy would actually shade the customers and probably keep them shopping longer as their cars' batteries get topped up for free. Just as food for thought, if Walmart did this to its currently existing 3,571 stores just in the United States, that's just the supercenters, incidentally. That's not talking about the smaller stores. The total capacity that those areas could generate would be over 11 gigawatts now, folks. Gigawatts. That's equivalent to a dozen large coal-fired plants. Taking account of the part-time nature of solar power, it's figured that would be enough to permanently shut down at least 4 or 5 of those power plants and give us equal or more electricity with literally, once the projects are built, zero carbon input from there on out. So why is there such a scarcity if this has so many good attributes? Well, one reason is that utility and fossil fuel and petroleum companies have repeatedly undermined government policies that would encourage, for instance, rooftop and parking lot solar facilities. The report that was sent to me described a number of what we would call anti-solar lobbying by a number of electrical companies, as well as, again, always tying in the fossil fuel industry. And what they do is spend their money, to undermine government policies that would actually encourage rooftop and parking lot solar facilities. They name a number of them, but the one that I just think is ridiculous that I've never liked, the guy's nuts, is the Koch family. Koch funded Americans for Prosperity and Consumer Energy Alliance, a fossil fuel and utility front group. They pretend to be pro, incidentally, green energy, and they're totally against it. Incidentally, for years, they actually got monies themselves from colleges and universities and different entities that were actually, again, playing the game, and they had convinced them that they're pro-green when indeed they're really still in the petroleum and fossil fuels business. Before I end this, let me mention one more study that I found interesting, just again because of the direction it goes in greening up our planet a little bit. It was a study by Nature magazine, one of my favorite, what I call peer-reviewed sources for reliable information. They found U.S. degraded lands now cover an area twice the size of the whole state of California, and the solar potential to supply more than one-third now, of the nation's electrical power. It could also mean incentives for new technologies. For instance, this is the one I was getting to. It's called photovoltaics. It's what it sounds like, photovoltaics. Solar panels that they float on inland canals, wastewater lagoons, and other water bodies. First, they're cheaper to build, and they're more efficient because, of course, they have natural cooling right there where they are. And in many circumstances, they benefit wildlife, attracting herons, grebes, cormorants, and other waterfowl, probably to feed on fish attracted to the shaded areas that they provide to the water that they're installed over to collect the solar power. Not to mention, this is something I thought of, as you cover those waterways, and incidentally, climate change is causing a number of areas of our country and our world to get warm, this could actually extend the numbers of species and maybe even the total populations of the fishes that could live there, because it would kind of alleviate the overheating caused by global warming. Well, to kind of end this, it's kind of off my cuff, but it's just things I think about. And it was a good weekend to sit and kind of go through it. So let's talk about it. Let's get our Walmarts to cover our cars. Let's make it easier for these big buildings that have 5-10 acre parking lots to turn them into a positive income for them instead of just a hot place to park your car. And thanks for bearing with me this Thanksgiving Day weekend on Organic